With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to One Up, delivered through the AI podcast channel. I'm your host as usual, well, somewhat usual, seeing as we haven't done one in ages, but I'm Guy Drinkle, as you probably know by now, and joining me is, as ever, Carl. How are you doing, Carl?
I'm all right, Guy. I'm not dead, despite popular rumours, so that's about the best I can say.
So, obviously, this will be probably a quickish catch-up chat, and then we'll... I'll make the promise at the start of the pod, this one, and then we should hopefully be somewhat back... somewhat be regular from now on, I hope, and we... Again, I'll promise the Witcher review. We'll do it at some point. Now we get to talk about the TV show as well. but yes, Carl, I mean, what have you been doing in our hiatus? It must have been... must be a good 6-odd months now.
Yeah, I'd say it is 6 months, because I remember the last time we were kind of previewing Pokemon a lot, so it would make sense with the time frame. Unfortunately, Guy, you know, I fell into the vices of mobile gaming, and you know, I fell into a particular mobile game. Oh dear, indeed. Game of Thrones Conquest. It's like a strategy game. It's quite bad, you know, like most of those mobile games are.
Season 8 that bad.
Yeah. Oh, this is possibly worse than Season 8 as far as Game of Thrones things go. But it's, you know, as mobile games are, it's addictive. And it's you know, it's really the social aspect of it all that kind of hooks you in. Like, I met some cool people. Shout out to my ex's fam, although I doubt anyone involved with that would listen to us. But, you know, you kind of get in, you meet some new people, you're kind of chatting online. Like, it's a cool kind of social aspect of it all. But the game itself is awful. I mean, you know, if we complain that games we play on consoles are broken and glitchy, like, try playing a mobile game like this one. And, you know, it's just every week you're discovering new glitches. They patch it and it just adds more glitches. And like the amount of money people go through, I think that's what ultimately caused me to quit, because I was kind of fearing the amount of money I was dropping on this. I won't give any figures, but
good God.
I mean, one of the main pulls of the game is that you get a dragon and you can grow that dragon. But I once had someone suggest to me that it costs 80 grand to get your dragon to the max level. Now, I think playing the game, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's about 20 grand for dragon. That's just a dragon. That's not your troops. It's not building up your castle. That's not doing all the other stuff you have to do. It's a very expensive game and a very shit game. So I'm glad I finally got to the point where I was just like, enough is enough. This is taking too much time, too much money. And I was like, I'm going to go play some real games. And then that's what I've done for the past month. And that's what I'm looking forward to discussing today. And as you said, we're hoping to make this regular again. That's very much my hope as well.
Yeah, we've got fuck all else to talk about.
No football. How about you, Guy? How has it been? You know, you must be kind of quite the switch for you, know, going from like Liverpool's most successful season in years, and you were probably non-stop pods every day, people wanting to talk about how good Liverpool were, to COVID-19, meaning there's no football, and therefore there's probably a lot less in terms of matches and that anyway to talk about.
Somehow it's been almost busier, but I think we've somehow like not used up all our ideas, hopefully, but we've crammed in quite a bit in the first 2 weeks. But with the AI Pro and stuff like that, we've got a decent amount of content. I mean, the free side's been a struggle. I mean, you're obviously part of the face-off lads who join in. People have been asking to do a face-off. I have no idea what we could talk about. But yeah, hope AI Pro seems to be churning along. I'm probably a level below the ideas guys in there. That's probably why it's churning along. But the free side, or my side of the free side, it's been a toughie, seeing as face-off is about debate and stuff like that. So, what do you think of the virus? Do you like the virus?
Yeah. who's dealing with the virus better, Boris Johnson or Donald Trump?
Oh, God. I think Donald wins that one in terms of being shit at his job. at least I was kind of caught up. Let's not mention the coronavirus, because I'm sure everyone mentions it. We'll try and churn it along, but we do have to mention it for E3 and stuff like that. But let's not talk about it
today.
We will have to mention it, but we'll try not to mention it too much. That's what we'll do. We'll talk about what games were played on non-mobile stuff, Carl. Even though, to be fair, I say that I used to love Hades. That was my game. Heyday, what a game. But let's get into the news. I mean, we've had a decent amount in, well, it's a tough time for everyone, really, in every sector of entertainment, every walk of life, as we mentioned, the corona and stuff like that. But there has been quite a lot of gaming news, because it was meant to be GDC? Whatever the hell it's called. It was meant to, was it last week it was meant to be, or a couple of weeks ago it was meant to be? So we've got specs for both the PS5 and the Xbox Series X, which is a bad name, Carl will go through and then we'll discuss. And as I alluded to, E3's been cancelled as well, as well as GDC was. So yeah, let's get into the first story about the spec comparison, Carl. Because obviously, there's a lot of things that we could talk about after this. But the old console wars, where people on Facebook comments slag each other off, seemingly.
Yeah, we're certainly back to that one, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But let's get into the story first. The title there, PS5 versus Xbox Series X, a complicated battle of SSD and GPU speeds. And this comes from Tom Warren over at The Verge. Sony has finally unveiled its PlayStation 5 specs today, although this was today a few weeks ago. And there are some surprisingly big differences between the PS5 and Microsoft's Xbox Series X. Both consoles are still arriving at the end of the year, and we're now starting to get a better idea of what both Microsoft and Sony have prioritized for next-gen games. Sony has picked different CPU, GPU, and even SSD speeds that will impact how next-gen games are developed for the PS5 and Xbox Series X. On the PS5 side, the console has 8 AMD Bayesian Zen 2 cores clocked at 3.5 GHz each, compared to 8 AMD Bayesian Zen 2 cores clocked at 3.8 GHz each on the Xbox Series X. With simultaneous multi-threading SMT enabled on the Xbox Series X, Microsoft's CPU cores dropped to 3.6 GHz each, so the difference here seems relatively minor on paper. It's the GPU and SSD sides where the PS5 and Xbox X Series X really differ. Sony has opted for a custom AMD RDNA 2 base GPU inside the PS5, which provides 10.28 teraflops of power with 36 compute units running at 2.23 gigahertz each. Microsoft has picked a custom AMD RDNA 2 base GPU for the Xbox Series X, but it can hit 12 teraflops of power with 52 compute units at 1.825 gigahertz each. And there's a table in the story there that kind of compares some of the main specs there. But I mean, you can see there's just to take the PlayStation 5, for example, you've got the memory 16 gigabytes GDDR6 compared to, let's say, the PlayStation 4 Pro, which is only 8 gigabytes of GDDR5. The Xbox Series X, again, 16 gigabytes compared to the Xbox One X, it's 12 gigabytes. So you are seeing kind of a jump there. The GPU, PlayStation 5, as we said, 10.28 teraflops. The PlayStation 4 Pro, 4.2 teraflops. So massive difference. The Xbox Series X, again, 12 teraflops compared to the 6 teraflops of the Xbox One X. So obviously we're seeing kind of a notable jump from the generations. And the story continues on there. Sony is using variable frequencies on both the CPU and GPU, which we'd normally refer as to boost clocks on PCs. It's slightly different, though. In an interview with Eurogamer, Sony PS5 system architect Mark Cerny reveals the console has a set power budget that's tied to the thermal limits of the system. That means the PS5 performance will vary depending on how much it's being pushed by games. Sony is hoping that by offering developers Sony is hoping that by offering developers less compute units running at a variable and higher clock rate, the company will be able to extract better performance out of the PS5. The reality is that it will require developers to do more work to optimize games for the console until we can find out how it compares to the more powerful on paper Xbox Series X. Storage is where the Xbox Series X and PS5 differ radically. Sony has created an impressive proprietary SSD solution that provides 825 gigabytes of storage and 5.5 gigabytes of performance. The Xbox Series X includes a custom 1 terabyte NVMe SSD, but its raw throughput is less than half at 2.4 gigabytes. That can mean load times differ massively between the PS5 and Xbox Series X, depending on what game developers optimize for. Sony is also allowing PS5 owners to expand storage with regular NVMe PC drives. But there's a slight caveat. We're still waiting to see PCIe 4.0 base drives that will match the bandwidth of what Sony has implemented in the PS5. And compatibility could be complex given that Sony will need to validate that drives will be fast enough and compatible with the PS5. Sony's expansion does mean that PS5 owners should be able to pick up a fast PCIe 4.0 NVMe drive and increase the storage of the console with relative ease. Microsoft is using a proprietary expansion card format for the Xbox Series X, and it has partnered with Seagate to produce 1 terabyte expansion cards for launch. We still don't know the price of these proprietary cards, nor how much fast PCIe 4.0 NVMe drives will cost later this year. Sony hasn't revealed any further details about the software side of the PS5 today, nor how many games will take advantage of the promised real-time ray tracing. On the Microsoft side, we've seen a demonstration of Quick Resume that lets you quickly switch between Xbox Series X games even after the console has been rebooted for a system update. We're also still waiting to see what the PS5 actually looks like. Sony continues to keep the design of the console a closely guarded secret, while Microsoft provided a first look at the Xbox Series X last year. Microsoft also revealed the exact dimensions of the Xbox Series X earlier this week. I don't think I'm ever going to get used to saying that name. But you can read the full story over on The Verge. So, yeah, let's get into this, Guy. So we know now how these consoles are going to run. I mean, the big focus seemed to be on the SSDs and the quick loading times from both sides. Obviously, Sony have been pushing that since the very start. Obviously, Mark Cerny gave that interview last year where he kind of showed off how Spider-Man, the underground scenes that load when you're fast travel, how quick they are on the PS5 compared to the PS4. I mean, did you watch either of the kind of videos revealing the specs or?
No. As I said, when you asked me before we started recording, I think I watched the Xbox One, but it does feel like it was 25 years ago. I'm pretty sure it was only 2 weeks ago, but it feels like that.
It was a couple of weeks ago. I didn't watch the Xbox the Xbox Series X. Got to get used to the name.
Yeah.
But I did watch the PlayStation 5. I wish I hadn't. It was just Mark Cerny standing behind a podium, basically talking about the specs, you know, talking about how the SSD is going to work, talking about how there's kind of how it's optimized for sound, better sound. He seemed to be bigging up the sound of the PS3 as if technically it was more impressive than the PS4 in some sense. He also talked about a little bit about ray tracing and that kind of thing, that they seem to be the main focus there. Now, with the SSD obviously being the focus there, it does sound like the PS5 has the edge in terms of loading speed, probably because they've put the focus on that, which is pretty cool considering that's going to be one of the biggest pulls of these new consoles is the SSD. But for me, I don't know about you, Guy, but for me, with the SSDs, the fact that technically the one that Sony is using isn't even available on the market. Now, there are going to be other ones that are compatible, but, you know, we don't know how much they're going to cost. Mm. And that's a real worry for me is how much we could potentially be paying for these SSDs moving forward, because, you know, I know some people only probably play a handful of games on their console. They probably just delete them then and move on to the next. And maybe the 885 gigabyte drive, or 825 gigabyte rather, will work for them. But for me, I have a 4 gigabyte hard drive for my PS4. And even then, I think that's getting close to full. So, you know, that's a big concern for me, is that they've gone so small. Really, I know solid state drives.
You've nearly filled 4 terabytes.
I have, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I have a lot of games. A lot of games. But, yeah, I've got a real... I had hoped that you know, we'd be looking at maybe a gig and a half, maybe even 2 terabytes. Though then, on the flip side, I worried how expensive that might make the consoles. But with this, I do have fears that it could fill up, and I'd be concerned as to how much it will cost to kind of get a replacement. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it does sound worrying. Well, I've not asked about the PS5. I've played like 3 games on the PS4, so it'll never be an issue for me. But in terms of for both of them, really, the accessories and stuff like that seem to be always the not most expensive bits, because we don't know what the pricing will be, but we imagine what, between $450 and $600, you'd imagine.
Ballpark.
Yeah, around there. And then accessories on top of that, it can start touching $1,000, really, can't it? I'm not sure what what it's like for the PlayStation, but obviously I think all the Xbox accessories work from 1 to X. So Series X, Christ, the name's awful. Just get used to it once the Xbox One's fucking dead. But once the Series X, all of it's compatible and stuff like that. So that's good. So there won't be that much cost in that regard for me. Getting a Series X. Series X. Christ, I have to think about it now. But yeah, I'm not sure if that's the same for Sony. I know the details haven't been as open as Xbox have. But the Xbox's exclusivity with Seagate, I think I was listening to IGN's podcast Unlocked a couple weeks ago. I was listening to one today, which Phil Spencer was on. That would have been useful to finish. but a couple of weeks ago, I think they pointed out that Seagate hard drives are about, I think they said in dollars, about between $150 and $200. Whether that's about £1 to £100 or euro, well, I don't even know. Don't even know what the fuck money is nowadays. but between, say if it's between £100 and £200 for a big ass hard drive on the Xbox, that's probably expected. But I mean, the terabyte, it's just the fact that games are getting bigger, isn't it? That's probably the main problem because, I mean, the terabyte, even a few years ago, it was unheard of. But I think my mate asked me to download Halo 5 the other day, for example, and I'm pretty sure that's about 120 gigabytes. so, yeah, it can add up quite quickly, and I'm not as bad as you with 4 terabytes, for fuck's sake, but I think I've got... I think the Xbox S, I've got 1 terabyte, and then I've got another one on top of that, and that's, like, 80% full as well. So it does add up quickly, especially in the day and age of games. But yeah, hopefully hard drive costs come down. But it's the thing is with Sony, they've not got an exclusivity thing, so people can possibly outdo each other on price. Whereas Xbox, if it's just Seagate, they could just stay at a price forever, can't they? Which is a tad worrying, I suppose.
Yeah, that's. I mean, the proprietary expansion cards. Now, I believe you'll obviously still be able to swap out the hard drive as well, obviously, which won't be proprietary. But proprietary is always a dirty word for me when it comes to console memory, because it makes me think of the Vita and how expensive the memory was for that. Mm. And I mean, the biggest cards they ever got for the Vita was 64 gigabytes. They never really, I don't think they came out in the West. I think it was just Japan. Some people might correct me on that, but I've never seen them anywhere other than Japan. And to this day, they're still really expensive because they were only developed by Sony. Whereas if they weren't proprietary and you'd had other companies making them, no doubt, you know, by now there'd be 256 gigabyte cards and they'd probably cost like €40 or something. Like with the Switch, like when the Switch first came out, the memory cards for that were quite expensive, but now you can get quite a big card like for pretty reasonable. And that's the difference when you're allowing competition when it's not proprietary. So that certainly is a concern. And I think the memory, while also one of the real exciting strengths of these consoles, these load speeds, you know, not that, I mean, we're long gone are the days of playing Morrowind on the original Xbox and it taking 10 minutes reloading screen. You know, we're past that, but you know, it's still nice, the idea of almost non-existing loading screens. Mm. That is exciting. But, you know, if that comes at a hefty price, I mean, the price of entrance for these consoles could be a lot, you know, with if you want to get decent memory and games and the like, as you were saying. And, you know, it is concerning, and it is something I suppose we just have to wait to hear more on, kind of to get an idea on that pricing. Now, another thing that seemed to be a big talking point after these consoles was backwards compatibility, because Mark Cerny during the presentation seemed to mention that the majority of the most played 100 games on the PS4 would be backwards compatible, but that's all he really said. And people were like, oh, you know, the rumors and earlier suggestions seemed to say that, you know, virtually the entire library would be backwards compatible. And Sony made an amendment then to an existing blog post to kind of clarify that and say that they do expect a lot of the 4,000 or so strong PS4 library to be backwards compatible. And they're currently in the process of testing titles and making sure that's the case. And that some titles will even run better on PS5 than they would have on PS4. Now, whereas, you know, Microsoft, nothing was really said of it. You know, it was just kind of, yeah, it's backwards compatible. And, you know, they alluded to the testing of that kind of thing. But there wasn't any kind of criticism or anything. And, you know, a lot of people have suggested, and I'd agree, that it's probably because Microsoft has that track record 4 backwards compatibility. You know, although the PS3 had some form of backwards compatibility, you know, that was because it basically had a PS2 inbuilt into one of the models. You know, whereas the Xbox 360 slowly introduced backwards compatibility with original Xbox games, PS4 had no backwards compatibility, but that's where Xbox One was really strong once they got that going, you know, with the 360 and the original Xbox games. And I think because of that, you know, Xbox are trusted to have that backwards compatibility.
I think Phil Spencer, fucking acting like he's my mate, Phil Spencer, I think he's mentioned about how one of the mistakes of the original Xbox One launch said, oh, with all the shit about, oh, it's going to be all digital and stuff like that. But you can't take your library with you. He was mentioning that on the podcast I mentioned earlier. And I think he said, this one, you should be able to take your digital library with you. So I think that without, obviously, backwards compatibility is probably, it's a newer thing for PlayStation, so they need to bring it up. Whereas I think you're right with Xbox. It's just a normal service, isn't it? So bringing stuff along, I think that it's just what to be expected. And you'd imagine since Phil's been in, he's probably been future-proofing, because the Xbox One was a pretty much a lost cause by the time he got in. So I think he's been future-proofing the next generation for a while, hasn't he? And backwards compatibility is a big part of that.
Certainly, obviously, you know, once Microsoft got that going for Xbox One, I think they always had it in mind for the follow-up console, whereas I think Sony have been working on it for a while. There was patents to it last year, and, you know, but I think around that time there was also rumors that, you know, this PS5 was going to have unheard of backwards compatibility, you know, playing PS3 games and PS2 games and the like. And that doesn't seem to be the case now, unless maybe those titles are available digitally in some way, similar to maybe PS1 classics, for example. But, you know, whatever about that, that always seemed a bit of a pipe dream, although one I would have liked to see. You know, you would at least hope for PS4 games. And I do expect there to be a very strong backwards compatibility on the PS5. I just think it was badly communicated here by Sony. You know, first with Mark Cerny simply mentioning that it would have the majority of the top 100 played, you know, that the way that reads to people is, oh, you might have like 80 games backwards compatibility, which is not at all what they're aiming for. They want a hell of a lot more than that, and I'm sure they will have a hell of a lot more than that. But then to try and correct that mistake by simply updating an existing blog post, not kind of rolling out even a new blog post, seems kind of like a weak reaction. Now, I know most websites have picked that up, gaming websites, and kind of reported it and kind of expanded on it, and that's how it's getting to people. But I just think Sony themselves handled the message poorly. And that kind of brings me on to my next point, really, is that I think the whole thing on both ends, you know, at least Xbox saving grace is they at least showed the console off previously. But with Sony, we haven't even seen the console. We haven't seen any games. You know, it's very poor showing. You know, these are kind of the things, as I was listening to a podcast a few days ago where someone said on it, this is the kind of thing that you have after you've rolled out kind of your E3 style presentation and shown some of the new games on the new consoles, you know, that where people can jump into this if they want to. The people who are really into their tech and their specs are going to do so, but you've already delivered the games. So I personally think this was a strange way to go about things, because I don't think at the end of the day, ray tracing and SSDs and teraflops are what are going to sell these consoles. It's the games that can be played on them.
Yeah. It's going to be strange. I mean, what do you make about Xbox saying, I think it was 18 months they said they weren't going to have an Xbox One Series X exclusive. And I think PlayStation have obviously, they've got a catalogue that can come forward. I imagine it's going to be God of War 2 and all that jazz. That'll be PlayStation 5 exclusives. I mean, do you think that's the right strategy? Because I think Phil, again, mentioning on Locked, I was listening to earlier, he was saying, like, this time round, Xbox One X, Series X people will be able to talk to Xbox One users in party chat and stuff like that. Do you think it's just probably one of the only Xboxes selling point, it's more of a community rather than just going up in generations, where obviously PS3, 4, 5, they're all quite separate, aren't they? Whereas the Xbox is, obviously we've mentioned backwards compatibility there. Do you think that's probably one of the different strategies there, is where Xbox as a whole is a community, it's Xbox, whereas PlayStation, it's PS3, 4, 5, as I mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, this generation is going to be strange at the beginning, because it's going to be different to any generation we've had previously, where we're kind of used to leaving our previous consoles and games behind, and, you know, kind of when you buy kind of the last hurrahs for the previous console, that, you know, that's kind of it. Whereas, you know, last time out, you know, you had games like The Last of Us as a prime example that came out. It was kind of the last hurrah for the PS3. And then a few months later, we got kind of a up-resed version for the PS5, kind of almost like a definitive version. And a lot of games got that treatment. Now, both companies have said that's not going to happen this time. And the suggestion seems to be, while there has been no official confirmation on either side, is that, for example, games like The Last of Us 2 and Ghost of Tsushima will come out as PS4 games, and then PS5 will kind of get more out of them, so to speak, you know, which is something I suppose Mark Cerny did touch on, that PS4 games will be somewhat enhanced by the performance of the PS5. And I think those two titles and others coming out at similar times will probably get that treatment. Similarly with some more recent Xbox games. But with the games moving forward, you know, it seems like Microsoft are going to just keep that going. You know, for example, it sounds like, you know, when you buy a copy of Halo Infinite, you know, it's I don't know how the box will look, but I assume in some sense, you know, like there are some 360 games that were compatible with the Xbox One, and, you know, you could get retail versions where it would say 360 and Xbox One on the box. Now, it was an Xbox 360 disc inside, but it would play on both consoles. I'd imagine there's going to be something similar from Xbox. It'll be Xbox One and Series X, and it'll work on both consoles. And that seems to be how they're going to, as you said, 18 months seem to be the indication how they're going to go forward. Now, what Sony are going to do, I don't know.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As in, you know, are they going to be releasing every game as a PS4 title and a PS5 title for a while? Are they going to just have the one sort of disc that works on both systems? you know, it'll be interesting to see how they work at moving forward. But regardless, it's clearly going to be kind of a different sense of things than what we've been used to, which kind of makes this upcoming generation, at least from a industry point of view, fascinating, really, as to kind of how things are going to go.
Yeah, and this kind of leads on to our next story. I mean, we're a bit short for time, so we won't do the full readout of the story, but I mean, it's quite self-explanatory. I mean, E3 has been, it's been cancelled, it's not even been postponed. I mean, what do you think about, obviously, safety first for everyone there, but let's expand on the console point. I mean, E3 being cancelled, that was obviously the big stage for, mainly for Xbox, Ubisoft. I think Warner Brothers said they were going to be there this year, which is certainly interesting. EA did their thing as well, but do you think this might be the end of E3? Because obviously it was kind of turning a bit shit year by year, especially with Sony pulling out. Do you think E3 can recover from that? And then we'll talk about what we could have expected from there.
Yeah, so I mean, clearly, you know, the COVID-19 crisis is having its effect on the industry, and E3 is one such victim of that, you know, and it's not surprising that it was cancelled given the amount of people that go through the doors at E3, but it's not that disappointing either, to be honest. I mean, the E3 is not what it used to be. You know, we talked a lot about it last year, how it's kind of become almost, you know, a public show these days. Kind of it's almost like any kind of convention, really, when it comes these days, because it's kind of lost the edge it had as regards to being the industry showcase that it once was. Obviously, with Sony pulling out first and kind of EA going out and doing their own thing, it's a shadow of what it once was, really. Now, obviously, Sony had already pulled out this year, so we already knew we were down Sony, and EA would have once again been doing their own thing. But as you alluded to, Jason Schreier did tweet kind of shortly after this that Warner Brothers were planning to do their own show, which presumably would have finally seen Rocksteady's game that we've been waiting for years, and possibly this Harry Potter RPG that's been rumored for a while and was pretty much leaked last year. So that's the one thing I'm really disappointed about, that we won't get to see that. But hopefully they do something digitally. And that seems to be the move here. Like, Ubisoft and Microsoft have already confirmed that they'll do some sort of digital showcase. You know, Nintendo said they'll have to change their plans, but obviously they only do a digital showcase every year anyway. Now, obviously, they're there on the floor. They usually, you know, in recent years, they've always focused one game, you know, Breath of Fire, Odyssey, Smash Brothers, that kind of thing. So they're going to have to change in that sense, but they can still do their E3 Direct, and I'm sure they will. And I'm sure the likes of Bethesda and Square Enix can do similar, because Square Enix basically just show a digitally recorded show anyway. They don't do any live on stage. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to have massive effects. I know that E3 themselves are hoping, like the ESA is hoping these companies will kind of still apply an E3 2020 branding to the digital shows, so that, you know, E3 2020 can live in some sense. And they've promised that E3 will be back in 2021. But a lot of industry analysts doubt that, because they just think that the writing's been on the wall for a while, and that E3 is on its last legs, and that it wasn't going to last much longer, and this could be the final nail in the coffin. I mean, what do you reckon on that?
Yeah, I think with the emergence of the Game Awards in December as well, I think that doesn't help. Sony seems to be more involved with that. I think we had, I think it was the year previous rather than 2019, I think it was 2018 rather than 2019, when we had all three heads of each big console on stage and stuff like that. So Sony seemingly want to be involved with that. Xbox obviously had their, they showed the Xbox One, the Xbox Series X, for fuck's sake, Xbox Series X, on that stage, which you'd probably think would be more of an E3 moment, which is obviously what PlayStation going for, they're showing it, whatever the hell, let's just call it a Sony Direct for now, or Sony's E3 replacement. They're obviously showing it for that, so the fact that bigger news is breaking on there doesn't help in that situation. And most people, we obviously don't know when this virus will allow us to go back to normality, but you'd imagine by December we could have some sort of award show with some people in the building at the very least, whether it's a full packed out stadium or whatever, not stadium, but venue, like it usually is. Maybe not, but even most likely will be, going off projections of we should hopefully be okay by the autumn at latest or something like that. But obviously time will tell with that. So yeah, a whole year without gaming news. This was a console release, or should be, hopefully be a console release. We have to talk about that yet as well. Hopefully that and that could be a big nail in the coffin. Whereas next year it'll just be, well, it's boring. It'd probably be a good thing, but it'd just be games. But a console launch year, and you don't get to do it, you can't do E3, where you're going to have Halo, probably wouldn't have had Last of Us on that week. I know it's not E3 directly involved, but you'd have Halo. Falls is always fun. Fable's been rumoured for 10 million years. There'd be so many games. Ubisoft finally getting the rumoured Assassin's Creed Vikings and stuff like that. Warner Brothers, as you mentioned, would have been massive. I mean, whatever the hell Rocksteady is, that must be one of the most hyped games ever. Harry Potter, doing a full game of Harry Potter, it's probably the first time since, I don't know, the PS2 movie games there'd be that much hype for a game under Harry Potter. And then Warner Brothers themselves making the Court of Owls game, or whatever it's called, the Batman game. I agree with you. Warner Brothers would be the most interesting one, because the other stuff we could probably have guessed. But that's probably a shame, but as you say, hopefully Warner Brothers do their own WB Direct or something like that in the summer, because that's definitely the most interesting thing there. Over, to be fair, Ubisoft's a bit of an unknown entity at the minute as well, but yeah, it's a shame, but if they're replacing it with Directs, I don't think it's a loss, really. It'd just be more accessible for us, whereas they might just drop it at a random time or something like that, but we can just watch it at our leisure. There's no, I will say, noncery in between introducing head of fucking art and sound or some bullshit and talks 10 minutes about a car. Or what was that PlayStation one when they had intermission because they were walking between fucking stages. I think it'll cut out the pageantry and all that stuff, and that's probably what we want. And it'll probably be helpful for game journalists as well, because they just want the information as well.
I mean, I do wonder, like, the kind of what level the console manufacturers' kind of showings will be at for E3 anyway. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, that was where they were going to drop. Obviously, Sony aren't going to be there, but people expected they'd do some sort of direct type thing. State of Play, isn't it? Some sort of State of Play where they cover PS5 games. I personally didn't expect that. I'm sure they would cover something, but I have long said, since Sony pulled out of E3 last year and then subsequently cancelled PSX, I thought they'd bring PSX back this year, maybe have it earlier, because usually it's around December, maybe have it like September and just do a big blowout on PS5 reveals. Similarly, Xbox, their kind of annual event, the name escapes me now, it's not quite as big as PSX, but I thought they'd kind of double down on that.
They're trying to build it, I think.
They tend to do it around August, I believe, anyway, and kind of have their big blowout on the Xbox Series X then. I still have that expectation, but now there's the possibility, which I would say is a strong possibility, that these consoles are going to be delayed due to manufacturing problems caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. So I could see them being delayed until spring, which means they could then kind of around October, November, have these big events and have their blowout on the consoles. I mean, do you, what's your gut feeling? Or do you think we're going to get kind of a lot of PS5 Series X info around E3?
Yeah.
Or what would have been E3? Or do you think it's going to be events later on in the year?
I think Xbox will, because they've kind of already confirmed it. I think they'll give out a big information. Well, they love a sizzle reel, don't they? I think we'll get the usual Xbox sizzle reel in the summer one way or another. I think it depends when people can go back to work, because you can't really make a console from home. Maybe Japan have the advantage. I presume Sony do all their manufacture in Japan. I don't know.
They don't know. Both of the consoles and indeed a lot of Nintendo stuff is obviously done in China why am I forgetting the name? They're like the biggest electric Fox. It's killing me. But I'm sure you're aware they basically if you have an electronic in your house, chances are it's manufactured in Foxconn. For a minute I was going to say Foxhound, Metal Gear Solid reference, but Foxconn, and obviously their kind of operations were shut down for quite a while, so I'd say that has been impacted. Now, there's been mixed rumors. One day you're hearing that they are going to be delayed. Another day you're hearing that no, both companies are still planning to release the consoles. But I think if they do release the consoles, you're probably going to have some situation where they're released in a very minimal amount. And we already had with the PS4 launch where they decided to pull the Japanese launch and focus on North America and then launch in Japan at a later date. So we've already had something like that in the past. It could be far worse than that. You know, we might not even get them in Europe for quite a while. It could just be North America, because that seems to be where they focus. And even then, I'm sure there'll be fights at the storefronts to get a machine if that's how they want to do it. So I think it'll make a lot of sense for them to delay it. I think a lot of games are going to be delayed anyway. A lot of companies can't work or are working from home, and it's not as straightforward. And we know, we've covered at length in news stories in the past, how much time and effort goes into developing a game. So I think inevitably there is going to be some delays there anyway. I mean, I think Jason Schreier tweeted during this that, you know, games releasing in April should be fine, but anything beyond that, he wouldn't be surprised to see delays. And, you know, we know he's probably the one person that's all in the know. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if he already knows about some delays that simply haven't been mentioned yet. So it would not surprise me in the slightest if we see delays for the consoles and for a lot of big titles. I'm hoping that The Last of Us 2 avoids such a delay, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Fuck that. If Cyberpunk gets delayed again, I might cry. I'm bored. Well, let's get into it. What games have we been playing? Because I've opened up my library and gone back to Ark, for fuck's sake.
Desperate times.
That's a game that stressed me out for like a year.
I've been playing a lot, actually. I mean, I alluded to earlier, once I escaped the vice of mobile gaming, I got back into regular games. The first thing I jumped into, which was something I'd been waiting to play, I picked it up in the run-up to Christmas but hadn't actually opened it, which was The Outer Worlds. I played through that over the space of about a week and finished it. Thought it was a very good game. Maybe not quite as good as I was hoping, but that's not to knock it. It's a very solid title. Yeah, you played through it as well. I mean, it's I liked the fact it's not too long. You know, you can probably finish it in about 40 hours, that's a lot of time. But at the same time, it's not an 100-hour game like a lot of those kind of open-world RPGs are. I wouldn't even say it's kind of self-contained maps rather than one open world. But, it's well done. It's well written. There's a lot of quirky characters, a lot of cool guns to play around with. I enjoyed my time with it and got it finished, and Kind of, I did every quest that I could. So, I mean, I definitely got my money's worth out of it. An enjoyable experience and a nice kind of jump back into games. Since finishing that, then I kind of went back to a few games I'd been playing before I went on a hiatus. Jumped back into Pokemon, got me some more Pokemon, trained my Pokemon up a few levels. Still really enjoy it. It's one of the better Pokemon games that I've tried to play in recent years. Also back into Detroit Become Human, trying to get that finished. I'm right close to the end. Still really enjoying that. I think it's the best Quantum Dream game since Heavy Rain. I know there's only been one between them, but it's a hell of a sight better than Beyond Two Souls. I Am Setsuna, still trying to get that finished. And the game I've been playing the most lately and the game that's possibly been keeping me sane during this lockdown, or, well, we're not calling it a lockdown here in Ireland, but it practically is one, which is Animal Crossing. You know, I felt the peer pressure from the internet. Everyone was playing Animal Crossing New Horizons. Everyone was calling it the game of the pandemic and that kind of thing. And the person who's been helping me keep sane during all this was playing it as well. And she convinced me that it would be a no-brainer to pick it up. So I got it. I actually even got it digitally, which, you know, from talking to me about games on here, that I'm definitely a proponent of physical games. So to not be able to get it physically, it was tough, but, you know, it was out of stock on Amazon. Everywhere else is closed. You know, it was a means to an end. Had to get it to keep myself sane. And it's so addictive. I mean, I literally am in working from home at the moment. My Switch sits on the desk, and so many times I go to pick it up and I have to remind myself I'm in work. I have to do work because I just want to pick it up. And it is a game that you can kind of pick up, play for a few minutes, put back down. There's always a new thing every day. You're working towards goals. You achieve those goals. Then the next day you see the dividends of that, you know, a new building appears on your island or someone moves in and that gives you more things to do. And, you know, you're always striving to prove your own house and buy furniture. And, you know, like how it works is like you take out a loan to build your house. And then when you pay off that loan, the guy offers to build you an even bigger house for an even bigger loan. I mean, it's kind of a bit of a capitalist system going on there. You know, people defend Tom Nook and say it's not capitalist because there's no interest. But we don't know what the real cost of constructing this house is. It may very well be capitalist. But nonetheless, he still gets me to always take out that bigger loan.
It's why Stardew is just full on communism. That's why I'd burn
it. Yeah. But it's great. Like, it's great how it's always giving you new things to do. You know, when the month turns over, some new plants and stuff can grow and new fish will appear and bugs and that, and others will disappear, which puts pressure on you towards the end of the month to try and catch everything that you can before they disappear for the next few months. But it's a great game, and I'm almost disappointed in hindsight that I never tried an Animal Crossing before, because they're a great game, really relaxing, and it's nice to play a game that's not challenging, that it's just kind of so easygoing and sociable. You know, you can kind of play it with your friends, go visit their island, have them over. Like, it's great. I'd really recommend it, guy. If you're looking for something to play, you know, something different, pick up Animal Crossing and come visit my island.
And that's where we'll finish up, because I have to go do another podcast. This has been a quick one for us, because we normally go about 2 hours, but as I said, there will be a Witcher review at one of these years, and that will probably go 100 hours, just like, well, that's not even the game, is it? Let's be honest.
170 hours. Yeah. We'll try and go real time through my playthrough.
Yeah. Just go quest by quest, foot by foot, monster by monster. But we'll finish up there. So thank you, Carl, and thank you, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.